Hey, everybody. JJ Cooper, Jeff Ponce, another Prospect Podcast. Yes, it is trade deadline week, but we're in the middle of it. We're recording this on Tuesday night to air on Wednesday, so we're not going to focus on trade deadline this week. We'll come back and kind of look at when the dust clears probably next week on that. This week, what we're going to look at is prospects who got off to great starts and have really started to struggle in the last 2 months, and prospects who got off to slow starts and have really turned it on the last 2 months. Some prospects that maybe, if you haven't been paying as close attention, maybe you haven't noticed like, oh, so-and-so's really turned it on, or, oh, so-and-so, I thought he was having a great year. Actually, no, he's not having a great year so far or so anymore. So we are going to dive straight into that, and we're going to start with the positive. We're going to start with the guys who, if you were watching in April and May, you may have been like, oh, this guy looks lost. And here we are now, and maybe that prospect's a little bit has found himself now. And there are a couple of White Sox on this list. It's not all bad news for the White Sox. We will start with, Jeff, with Colson Montgomery, who, to his credit, looked lost last year in AAA Charlotte, started out this year even worse, where he ended up being sent back down to the Complex League. It was a brief stop. Came back up to AAA, hit in AAA. Now he's hitting in the majors as we talk right now. He's hitting .273, .333, .515 with a very maintainable 25% strikeout rate. Shown some power, shown bat speed, shown defense. How sold are you that this is okay? Colson Montgomery is fixed versus Colson Montgomery's on a nice hot streak. But again, we will note he's been better for 2 months now. This is not a week. This is not 2 weeks. This is two solid months of good production.
And let's back up the truck a little bit too, because I think that at one point 2 years ago, right prior to the 2024 season, coming out of 2023, Montgomery had been a little injury riddled early in his career, but he had hit everywhere he had been. The underlying data was pretty good. The high end exit velocities were good. The contact numbers were really good. The approach numbers were really good. The angles were really good as well. And it was like, hey, you know, good chance to play shortstop, maybe moves over to third base, bigger bodied, kind of in the same class as like a Marcelo Meyer in terms of how he was viewed a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And gets to AAA, gets an opportunity to kind of go through some growing pains for a year. And I feel like even in the offseason, we sort of were concerned, but we're kind of saying, all right, let's pump the brakes a little bit. When he came back this year and was even worse for over a month, gets sent down to the ACL, more or less at the beginning of the Complex League season on May 5th, plays a handful of games there, and then comes back, and it takes a long time to sort of buy that trust back a little bit when you free fall as hard as Montgomery had. And there wasn't like any substantial injury or anything like that. So I think I still have still guarded optimism that I do think that maybe he's come through these struggles, because there was a lot of underlying stuff that wasn't terrible. But at the same time, the swing decisions had backed up a little bit. The contact had certainly backed up a little bit. The contact quality backed up. And I think even the sort of age excuse, you know, started to wear thin a little bit this year. Now, since they sent him down to the ACL, just in AAA, we know about the majors numbers. We can talk about that. He hit .270, .353, .574. The power was back. The strikeouts were still a little higher than you would have anticipated based on what his pedigree had been and what we had seen in the lower minors.
But much better than they were before he went down.
Exactly. And the contact quality was there. You know, I don't know specifically what it was that changed. I don't think it was a massive scale approach change or anything like that. I think it was probably more swing and probably posture oriented, which is what I think a lot of the time we see the adjustments, swing adjustments people talk about. It's more or less bat here, bat there, where the hand position is, that sort of thing, than some sort of massive overhaul. It's just small tweaks that maybe allow somebody to get to a ball off the plate they weren't getting to, or just, you know, attack maybe off the plate. And that's kind of what we saw in some of the underlying data when we did try to dive in a little bit on Montgomery. So I think it's interesting. I think it's great that he's having success now, you know, in the major leagues. Sometimes that's sort of the switch that guys need to sort of, you know, get to that next level. And a lot of what he's done over these 20 or so games in the majors at this point is really sustainable. Like you said, the strikeout rate is actually better. The walk rate is kind of in line from what we've seen from Montgomery in the upper minors. And his, you know, batting average on balls in play is just .318. So it's
not outlandish. It's not something where
exactly. And I think we even look at the batted ball profile. There's some high end, you know, exit velos there. You talked about the bat speed, the barrel rate at 10.2% is pretty good. You know, the average exit velocity is lower. The hard hit rate isn't great. I think some of that is just getting that consistency, and he is a young player. We will see that sort of thing. But I think it is encouraging, and he's hitting the ball in the air more consistently, showing a little bit of pull side air as well. So I think those combination of traits are good things and good developments with Montgomery. And he's a guy we jettisoned off the top 100. And now I kind of look at it and said, you know, maybe we should have been a little bit more patient with Montgomery, but that's not how things work.
It is encouraging. It is encouraging. And especially the key thing is he was so young that now you look at it and it's like, okay, this is a guy who's one of the younger shortstops in the big leagues. He can play shortstop. These are, you know, again, especially can play all really, really kind of all around the infield if you want. But this is now a guy who looks again like a building block for the White Sox, who need building blocks. So encouraging there.
Kratz, at some point, we're going to laugh about how healthcare was so reactive and not proactive. And we're starting to change that with Superpower. They believe every human has 100 plus year potential, and they're here to help you get there. I'm a big believer in this. I just started the journey, so I'm excited about it. And what do you think?
As a player, you're always looking ways to improve yourself, improve your health. And this is an easy, easy way. Superpower's made it way easier than when I was playing. You had to go get all these lab panels, and it was a long, drawn out, expensive process. But now with Superpower, so this is awesome for me. I'm excited about it.
They'll send a licensed professional to your home, or you can visit a nearby lab. For a limited time, the FT fam can get $50 off an annual Superpower membership by using code FOUL at checkout. Just head to superpower.com and use code FOUL to get our exclusive discount. Your biology decoded, your blueprint activated with Superpower. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, and please support FT and tell them we sent you.
We're going to jump straight to another White Sox, because if you look at his overall numbers, George Walkow, you're not going to be wowed. Walkow overall this year is hitting .219, .316, .349 at Kannapolis, low A Kannapolis. That's not good for a guy who the real shocking one there is that slugging percentage for a guy who does have athleticism and jaw dropping power. He's not really getting to it. But if you dig a little deeper again, there are some encouraging signs here. Walkow hit .286, .383, .457 in June, and this month, .239, .354, .373. We're not saying that this is a guy who's all of a sudden tearing the cover off the ball, but that is a massive improvement and a significant cut in the strikeout rate, which has always been his biggest problem over the last couple of months. The hope is maybe here you're seeing a guy whose contact rate is improving, and then the power starts to kind of come back again. And his power is some where he could literally have a week where you turn around and say he's slugging 800, you know, for a week.
Yeah. And I think it also kind of needs to be stated, just based on park factors and league factors, as far as power numbers go, home run numbers and slugging numbers go, the Carolina League at this point, low A Carolina League, seems to sort of be the bottom of the barrel in terms, even the Florida State League at this point seems to play a lot more power friendly than the Carolina League parks do. I was looking earlier this week, kind of putting some context to numbers, and I think there were maybe four or five hitters that have double digit home runs at this point in the season in the Carolina League, at least among qualified hitters, etc. So, you know, I don't think there's anybody that's slugging .500 in the league. So a .416 slugging percentage for Walkow over that period of time is probably like a .500 plus slugging in almost any other league too.
We're working on some updated park factors. We did them at the start of the year, but I'm working on some. And when you do that, when the ones I'm working on right now have Kannapolis as a 79 on the 100 is an average home run park, 79 is one of the lowest you're going to see in the minors. So it is, it's a home park also that really diminishes home run power in a league that diminishes home run power. So you have that. The other thing that does jump out with him, if you said, okay, well, what's improved for him? He's swinging less. He was at 54% before June 1st. He's at 47% since June 1st, which has been, sometimes you see guys who need to swing more. Sometimes you see guys swing less. In his case, it's swing less because that swing rate, then his chase rate has gone from 35% to 28%. Big problem for with the long levers, with the holes he's going to have even in the zone. He's not a guy who can expand the zone and make a pitcher's job easier. He's doing that better. He's making better decisions on his swings, which has paid off. Like when you look at kind of in the zone from up to June 1st, 204, 196, 323 on pitches in the strike zone, 269, 277, 495 on pitches in the strike zone since June 1st. That's what you need to see more of, right? Like, that's where you need to see. I know the on-base percentage. Don't worry about the on-base percentage there. Those are in-zone pitches. You're not going to have a high on-base percentage above your batting average on in-zone pitches. But he needs to make better swing decisions. He's been doing that. Again, don't take this and go, oh, he's fixed everything. There's still a lot of work to do. This is a guy in low A. I would still describe him as kind of one of the larger bounds between what he could be if everything breaks right and what he likely will be, right? Like if you said likely will be, the likelihood is that this is not a significant big leaguer. If you talk about the performance, the current issues and flaws in his game, but if you said a lot of guys, when you talk about that who are in A ball, especially low A, you would say that these limitations kind of will stay. Well, the upside's not there to really overcome that. This is a guy who the upside is massive because he is big and athletic for a big guy. If at all, he's playing center field still. Don't think he's going to be a center fielder long term, yeah. But he is playing it.
And I think, you know, over the years, we've seen a lot of these guys come into pro ball, bigger sluggers like this that have some of these sort of plate skills or at least contact bat to ball deficiencies. And the fact that Wolcow is as young as he is, as a high school draftee from a few years ago, you know, it takes a little longer with these bigger bodied sluggers. I mean, I think it's obviously a pie in the sky sort of comparison at this point, but I think we've seen the step forward that Spencer Jones has taken this season. And just it takes a little more time with some of those bigger guys. It took a little, once again, this is pie in the sky. It took a little longer with Aaron Judge. It does take a little longer to iron out some of these swings. But as you said, the upside in terms of the power is massive. And I think what all those guys have in common is just learning the stuff that you can attack on the outer halves of the zone that are good chase swings versus bad chase swings, staying away from certain types of spin and trying to attack certain quadrants and, you know, zone certain pitches that you just focus on, whether it's, you know, fastballs in the, you know, the upper quadrants or sliders that hang in a certain area. Like you just have stuff that you're programmed into and you learn to attack those pitches. And I think that's when those guys take the next step forward because they do have, you know, this exposure to swing and miss just naturally because, as you said, of the longer levers and all that sort of thing. So they got
a bigger strike zone, a bigger actual strike zone.
Yeah, bigger strike zones, exactly.
Again, we're not saying any of these guys are going to become Aaron Judge because Aaron Judge is one of the best players of all time at this point. I do always love to share the stat, though. When you talk about that guy's developing, Aaron Judge may slug 700 in the big leagues this year. Aaron Judge never slugged 500 in the minor leagues, which is the most amazing stat I can think of today. But speaking of other sluggers and speaking of other guys who play, you know, kind of power-based positions, the last time that we were paying, you know, that a lot of people paid attention to Tyler Locklear with the Mariners, he came up last year, he didn't hit, sent back down to AAA, didn't have a great start to the season. Now you turn around, he's hitting 316, 401, 543 as we record this. And the last 2 months have been especially good. What is it kind of jumping out to you, Jeff, about what Tyler Locklear is doing now?
Yeah, you know, I kind of dug into him a little bit as a, you know, a player of the month because he had such an outstanding July. And I think a lot of it is just he's making enough contact. The swing decisions are good enough that doesn't expand the zone a whole lot. He attacks a lot in the zone. And his hard hit contact is at pretty good angles. It's not at great angles all the time. There is still some swing and miss, but he does mitigate that, as we were talking about with some of these bigger sluggers, by kind of limiting what he does and doesn't swing at, doesn't chase a lot of spin, particularly outside of the zone. And it's plus, maybe plus, plus raw power, really big exit velocities. You know, it's over 107 in terms of his 90th percentile. And compares favorably because we have these numbers for both big leaguers and AAA players on Hawkeye systems that we trust, and it compares really favorably with some of the better sluggers in the game in terms of what his raw power output is. So I think there's enough plate skills, angles, and just this big power tool. The question with Locklear, and I think at the time when he came up, and still kind of remains, is, you know, his lack of a position, because he is a first baseman. If he had the ability to play an average or better third base, he would have played a lot of third base for the Mariners over the last year, as Ben Williamson has gotten reps instead of him, despite having, you know, a bat that isn't close to Locklear, frankly. But the glove is much better, and he provides just enough offense that when those opportunities do come up and someone has to fill in a third, Williamson gets a lot of those reps when it potentially could have been Locklear. So when I was writing him up the other day, I kind of felt as if this might be a guy to tie this into the trade deadline. Maybe this is a trade piece in, you know, whatever deal the Mariners end up trying to make. Maybe another team that, you know, needs a first baseman, a DH, and needs some power in the lineup, you know, could take a Locklear and kind of plug and play immediately, because he does look at this point as if he's major league ready.
That said, now I'll kind of pull some cold water here, which is, this kind of, to me, is a perfect illustration. We get all the time questions about, why do you not have this first baseman higher on your top 100? And Tyler Locklear right now is the perfect example of the way I've been saying it this week. This was my thing this week. If you're a shortstop who can hit, they leave the door wide open for you, right? Come on in, settle in. We've seen this with Colson Montgomery, for example. Colson Montgomery, I know he's young, but Colson Montgomery was terrible for a year and a couple of months. And then as soon as he's better, he's up because he can help a team right away. If you're a first baseman and you're really first base only, they don't open the door. They may leave it unlocked, but then they're like, when you get there, you better open it. You better stick your foot in when they try to close the door. You better open it yourself and then settle in and show right away that you can hit, because the Mariners have had a gaping hole at first base all season. They've been playing Donovan Solano. They tried Rowdy Tellez, who they then DFA'd. Luke Raley is both bad defensively at first base and not hitting. That's been their first baseman this year. And never did they have a moment. And again, when we say this, Locklear is hitting 425, 495, 825 this month. But he hit 290, 385, 613 last month as well. Even with him on a two-month heater, the Mariners were not like, we're going to see if Tyler Locklear can fix this. They said, we're going to go out. And they, by the way, I don't blame them for this. Josh Naylor is going to make them a better team. Mm-hmm. But it does feel like that Tyler Locklear's window, and maybe he gets one more window. Josh Naylor is a free agent at the end of the year. Maybe he gets one more window next year to prove it. But the window as a first baseman does feel like it either doesn't open, you know, sometimes they just keep the window locked or the door locked. And then sometimes it's like, you've got this very small period of time to prove it because you can't play those other positions. I bring this up also because, like, we see, I mean, just other examples. I was watching Matt Mervis play for the Marlins in AAA for AAA Jacksonville, who's struggling in AAA now. Matt Mervis had a great year with the Cubs a couple of years ago, had that like little time where it's like, okay, you better mash. He didn't mash. Back to the minors you go. Davison De Los Santos hit 40 homers basically for the D-backs/Marlins last year. Nope, not an opportunity. We talk about Jonathan Long now with the Cubs. I don't know if Jonathan Long is going to have an opportunity with the Cubs. And I don't know if he's, you know, going to have some opportunity to someone else. I was watching Bobby Seymour, who, by the way, if you check out Bobby Seymour's numbers now in a full season over 2 years at AAA, dude just mashes, but he's a first base only. And so it just does illustrate how difficult it is to be a first base only prospect who kind of carves out a big league career. And that's kind of the thing, like you said, maybe he's included in a deal, but if I'm the team acquiring him, he's not going to be the cornerstone piece, because the minute that the Mariners offer him, I'm going to be like, you didn't want him to be your first baseman, so why do you think that we want him to be ours?
Yeah, I also think that he was probably a bad fit for that park, but they gave him two chances last year, so they've already burned options as well. It's just like they rocketed him up to the big leagues. They didn't give him a very long leash. And, you know, he's been really productive of late over the last couple of months in AAA. He's still only 24 as well. It's not like he's a 26-year-old first, but it is
16 games. Yeah. 16 major league games. When I say that they leave the door cracked like that, you better come in and you better shove it wide open. And then you better stick a chair in the door to be like, you're not put closing this door behind me. You're not pushing me back out. It's just really hard to be a first baseman. But that'll take us to another position, which is a little easier. Dante Norrie, outfitted with the Phillies. Slow start, has gotten better. What have you seen with Dante Norrie over the last couple of months that encourages you again? And we're saying these are not guys, let's be clear here. We're not talking about guys who had great full seasons. We're talking about guys who had struggles to start the year and then have turned it around. Norrie at this point, basically back, kind of finished last year and then back this year in the FSL, 263, 355, 379, 25 steals in 32 attempts this year.
Yeah, and I think this was a guy that was interesting because he was a little bit older as a high school player, is assigned to a full season level for that reason, right out the gate, despite being, a little bit more raw potentially. So it took some time to settle in. So I think you look over the first few months, it wasn't bad. The contact wasn't bad. The swing decisions weren't bad. But, certainly the impact wasn't there. He wasn't getting the ball in the air consistently. Hit 231, 313, 313 over the first 2 months of the season. Since that point, 301, 402, 455. The strikeout rate, which was already pretty low, is down. The swing rate's been up. And he's walking more. So, the chase swings have been down a little bit, but he's just making better swing decisions, probably getting, his sea legs a little bit. I think with some of these younger players in A-ball, the first few months, especially if they're going from, a high school background where, maybe you didn't play super high level competition. There's only kind of a few regions throughout the country where you see that, or, you weren't like a really early USA baseball guy that was on all these different national teams. You got to make up some of that ground. And I think we've seen that. We're seeing more power. We're seeing the speed play a little bit more. He's still kind of a frantic base runner at times. But if he gets a ball to a gap, he's a guy that's going to take extra bases. And I think a lot of that athleticism stuff is starting to tick up, and the skills have matched. And when you have that athleticism, a little bit of power, some speed, of course, and you're not striking out a lot, you're showing above average contact and good swing decisions. I think, altogether that, typically equals out and you end up being a pretty good prospect. So I think he's a name to follow now after kind of being a little bit of a questionable player, I think, after the draft, just in terms of old, not a ton of experience, wasn't ranked necessarily as high as he went. But it's starting to show some upside and, show some of that athleticism that showed in the testing.
So we've rolled through prospects who are off to great starts. After this break, we will come back and look at prospects who are tailing off after hot starts. When your business has an opening that you needed to fill yesterday, there's an easy answer to your problem. How do you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your posts jump to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. For us, Indeed has made hiring easy time after time. We get great candidates who find us on Indeed, and we can do the entire hiring process all within Indeed. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed, and listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
In today's fast-changing digital world, proving your company's trustworthy isn't just important for growth, it's essential. That's why Vanta is here. Vanta helps companies of all sizes get compliant fast and stay that way with their proprietary AI, automation, and continuous monitoring. So whether you're a startup tackling your first SOC 2 or ISO 27001 or an enterprise managing vendor risk, Vanta's trust management platform makes it quicker, easier, and more scalable. It even helps you complete security questionnaires up to 5 times faster, so you can close bigger deals sooner. And the impact? According to a recent IDC study, Vanta customers cut over $500,000 a year in costs and boost productivity by 3 times. Establishing trust isn't optional. Vanta makes it automatic. Visit vanta.com/go to sign up for a free demo today. That's vanta.com/go. In today's fast-changing digital world, proving your company's trustworthy isn't just important for growth. It's essential. That's why Vanta is here. Vanta helps companies of all sizes get compliant fast and stay that way with their proprietary AI, automation, and continuous monitoring. So whether you're a startup tackling your first SOC 2 or ISO 27001 or an enterprise managing vendor risk, Vanta's trust management platform makes it quicker, easier, and more scalable. It even helps you complete security questionnaires up to 5 times faster, so you can close bigger deals sooner. And the impact? According to a recent IDC study, Vanta customers cut over $500,000 a year in costs and boost productivity by 3 times. Establishing trust isn't optional. Vanta makes it automatic. Visit vanta.com/go to sign up for a free demo today. That's vanta.com/go.
So, Jeff, we also now have prospects who have fallen off. I'm going to start here with one who, if you were paying attention early this year, you'd be like, wow, Arjun Namal, the Blue Jays shortstop, really setting the Northwest League kind of on fire for the first 2 months of the season. Not so much now. Again, guys can get run hot, guys can run cold, but for the last 2 months, Arjun Namal has really seen kind of the numbers tail off. What are you seeing? And I've got something I wanted to share also. What are you seeing from Arjun Namal? Like, as kind of this what started off as a very good season has kind of he's come back to earth.
Yeah. And I think, you know, not spoiling any of the numbers and the stuff that you dug up, I think just by watching a lot of Vancouver games and seeing a lot of Namal at bats beginning of the season versus now, there's a lot more swing and miss. He seems a little more caught in between. The timing isn't as good, just in terms of like how long his barrel was coming through the zone at the beginning of the year and spring training, kind of after they made the adjustments last year. It felt like he could hit anything, whether, you know, he'd turn on something that was on the inner half and just, you know, destroy it to his pull side. But he was catching stuff, you know, middle out as well. And, you know, a lot of that has dried up. And it seems like even the swing decisions, which historically for Namal, even coming into pro ball, had been one of his strengths, was he wasn't a guy that expanded the zone a lot and really made pitchers work. he's not doing that as much. And, you know, it's just been a confidence killer for him.
The thing that does jump out kind of along those lines of what you're saying, sliders, especially, like, really what's kind of one of the things that does jump out with Amala is sliders were not an issue for him early in the season. For June 1st, 261, 352, 522 against sliders. Since June 1st, 078, 096, 118 is his slash line against sliders. Basically, before, pitches on the outer third or off the zone weren't really a big issue. Now, pitchers are just wearing him out, staying away, 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 away. And he's got to find kind of an answer for that. That's something where, again, we get to this point in the season. One of the things that I always kind of am challenged on things like this is, we're going to get to this on the next guy that we talk about also. How much of this is there a flaw here that has to be fixed? How much of it is that as a young player gets tired, some of these issues kind of arise where you're no longer seeing the same swing. You're no longer seeing the same bat speed that you were before. We'll see. But, like, again, when you look at it, Namala this month, 178, 302, 260. Last month, 158, 252, 263. He has not homered this month. He hit two last month. And we say that because he hit nine in the first 2 months of the season. The bat seems to have slowed down. The plate coverage, especially on the outer third, has dropped off. There's, again, he's going to have to pick it up. This is something where, as you're monitoring it, still a very good prospect, but how much, I guess I'll ask you to our Blue Jays list, how much does this kind of raise a little bit of a, not a red flag yet, but like a, let's put a yellow flag, a caution flag here of what, you know, to expect from Arjun Amala?
Yeah, I think there's definitely, you know, a little bit of a red flag, as we've seen some struggles, and we saw this sort of good middle period between the beginning of last season where he struggled and the, you know, the second half seemingly of this season where he's really struggled. And, you know, other guys on that team, Victor Arias and others, have gotten promotions up to New Hampshire. I think that had kind of initially been the plan, at least in the early point in the season when he was really, you know, slugging and was one of the best hitters in any high A level, let alone the Northwest League. And, you know, JoJo Parker enters the fold. They've had great performances from a ton of pitchers in this organization this year, whether it's, you know, Treya Savage, you know, Kendry Rojas is now a guy that's really moving up, Cal Steven, you know, Gage Stanifer, and Johnny King. I mean, these are some of the best performing pitching prospects in the minors this year. It kind of puts into question, you know, his place as a top 50 prospect in the game and, you know, the top guy in the Blue Jay system at the moment, because you do have to wonder if this is going to be a constant with Namala where, you know, there's great performance and then some big adjustment period that timing gets off or whatever it might be.
He has run very hot and cold in his pro career, very young still, but, like, as you remember, if you are a Blue Jays fan or someone who follows prospects, started last year awfully, like was in the FSL, had to be sent down to the FCL, and then finished the year on fire. Great, you know, one of the better hitters in the FSL. So, like, he's had now essentially two really hot periods and two really cold periods during essentially a almost 2 year pro career. You know, we'll see again. We'll see how the season finishes for him. Speaking of young shortstops, Franklin Arias, who got a promotion up to, got the bump, has gotten a bump this year up and promotion. But Franklin Arias has really kind of, after a very good start at the season, has really tailed off. I'll kind of start on this one, then kick it to you. Like, diving in kind of on what he's doing, 263, 309, 382 overall since he was promoted to High A Greenville. So there's nothing there that you go, oh, that's terrible. 169, 228, 265 in June, 208, 250, 292 in July. When I look at it, trying to see, like, okay, what's changing? What are pitchers doing to him? It's not like, oh, he started really chasing. It's not like with him that you look at it and say, oh, pitchers have found this hole in his swing or anything like that. What I would say that really does jump out is it does seem like he's just worn out. When he was doing well, when he was going well, he was wearing out left center field, right? Which should be kind of one of his areas to do damage, to pull the ball to the left center field power alley. And that is no longer part of his game right now. Like, he has just stopped hitting balls there. And so that means that the power really kind of goes away. If you look at it and say, okay, you know, what's going on? Like, the swing and miss is not really that much different. The things that you would say like, oh, this is a glaring flaw, aren't there as much as you just say, you're not hitting the ball. Like, it just seems like that he's tired and the bat speed's not where it was. We'll see. That's, you know, that's my impression, but anything else that jumps out to you about Arias?
Yeah. You know, I think that this is sort of what a lot of people thought was coming when his prospect star seemed to rise a little bit more than was probably warranted, at least according to, you know, a lot of scouts that cover the Red Sox organization. It's a very good hit tool. There's no denying that. It's plus bat to ball ability mixed with really good swing decisions. And his shortstop defense is pretty good. Probably doesn't have the arm for shortstop long-term, but could be a really good defensive second baseman. And I think when people hear that, they just sort of assume and they look at the stolen base totals that he's a plus runner. He's not. It's probably more fringe run to maybe even below average run. He's probably a better version of Adell Amador, but we kind of saw a similar profile to this, you know, and the EVs aren't great. The angles aren't great. He's not hitting for a lot of power in a park that, in a league where there's some parks like Asheville, et cetera, where, you know, the power numbers typically jump when you leave Salem. That hasn't happened for him. He's not fast enough to kind of run out some of those infield singles and that sort of thing. So, you know, he either needs to gain speed, which is probably not going to happen, or he needs to gain a little bit of impact for this profile to really play. Otherwise, he's probably maybe just a utility infielder. I think that the hit tool is good enough that it could carry the profile, but I do think we're starting to see some, you know, some cracks in the facade now, just in terms of, like, you know, what this player can be. And he's in an organization that values adding impact, values adding bat speed. He's been in the organization for a couple of years and hasn't added a whole lot of impact. So you sometimes have to wonder if, you know, maybe there isn't enough of an engine to sort of build it out. So, you know, all was not lost. I want to say, like, this is still
a top 100 prospect.
Yeah. With really good bat to ball skills and great approach. And I think he's going to hit, and he's still very, very young and young for the level. But, you know, if he ends up as a hit tool second baseman with 40 power, I do think that's kind of an underwhelming outcome a little bit just based on where he's ranked.
That's, speaking of guys though, who do have power, but it's been a little bit missing lately. Bryce Eldridge, the Giants first baseman, again, another guy got a promotion. Some of what we're talking about here can be tied to getting a bump in level. He had a great start to the year, AA Richmond, was promoted to AAA and has really kind of struggled at the plate a good bit kind of since then. Like, with Eldridge, he is still very young for AAA. I know that, you know, but 226, 288, 495 overall since he got the promotion to AAA. And then it was 230, 284, 426 in June. A little better, 333, 429, 333. But, you know, in, I'm sorry, no, 226. 226, 288, 495 overall at Sacramento. So, you know, he did have a little injury there. So he did have a time, you know, some time off and then a time down in the ACL as well. But what have you seen with Bryce so far? And what are you kind of seeing that he kind of maybe needs to do?
Yeah, I think there's a lot more swing and miss is the thing that kind of really jumps out to you when looking at the profile. Now, there's so much power here that even when he struggles and he's swinging and missing at a really high rate and the strikeout rate is north of 30% since he returned after the All-Star break, which is a smaller sample. It's, you know, only about 10 games. It's been about a 33% strikeout rate, but, you know, he's slugged, he's hit for power. So I think that's still there. But it's sort of what we had anticipated. Despite being a really talented player, he played a ton of baseball last year. You know, 116 game regular season. You know, in his first full professional season, which is kind of an outrageous amount of games. Then went to the Arizona Fall League, kind of wore down there a little bit, and then has dealt with some injuries, a hamstring injury, you know, some wear and tear, kind of soft tissue stuff. So, you know, I wonder if there was some fatigue from that really big jump of being a high school player, you know, the previous spring to, you know, being all over the place, futures game, Arizona Fall League, playing 116 games. You know, remember he got up late in the season to AAA for the playoffs just to give him some extra time. So I think some of it is just the growing pains of a young player who hasn't had a whole lot of reps this season. And at 20 years old, has kind of been jettisoned up to one of the highest levels in the minor leagues and is just trying to keep afloat. But the elite quality of contact, the power and the angles, all that stuff is still there. Even as he struggled, he's got a 269 ISO over 25 games in AAA this year. So I think that kind of speaks for itself. But yeah, the approach stuff isn't great. He's not walking a ton and he's swinging and missing. And I know you are going to dive in a little bit more on just, you know, what in particular he's getting exploited by.
Changeups. Changeups at AAA. A AAA changeup is not a pitch that Bryce Eldridge wants to see. He's seen 79 of them so far, Synergy Sports data here. 51% of those are strikes, 46% swing percentage. Okay, those numbers are pretty normal. 64% miss rate against changeups. That number's not normal. 33% chase rate against changeups. He's not, that's just you're not seeing them, right? You think you are seeing a fastball. And so if you can throw a quality changeup below the zone, chances are that Bryce Eldridge is either going to swing over it right now in AAA or top it and make really weak contact. Those are the two things that are really happening with it. As you said, this is a guy who's very young for the level, but that's going to be something that he's getting. You know, he's getting a better taste of those than he's ever gotten before. That's something he's going to have to improve. And another first baseman we wanted to cover here today, who's on the IL right now. Xavier Isaac is on the IL. And this is one that kind of, okay, maybe we could have even just said the answer is injuries, right? I do want to highlight it though, because so Xavier Isaac this year has yet to play a game in the field. He's had kind of hand and wrist issues. He's on the IL now. Really was struggling before he went on the IL. You do have to wonder kind of how much of that is, you know, kind of tied to that. Swing and miss rate was, again, a problem in June before he went on the IL. I just bring this up, though, because, like, we just talked about it. First baseman, you have to really match. We're talking about Tyler Locklear, who is slugging over 800 this month and can't get a spot in the big leagues. Xavier Isaac is a first baseman, and he's shown really good power at times in the minors. He's shown really good ability to get on base and hit for average earlier in his pro career, kind of shifted more into the slugger approach as he hit Double A. But this is a return to Double A after, you know, a good bit of time there last year, injury plagued season. But I would just say, you know, we're bringing up again, this is a guy who is going to have to mash because of the profile, and he's hitting 201. It's 201, 366, 446, especially when you throw in the Southern League. That's better than you think it is, because the Southern League is a really hard place to hit. But that is a concern. That is another guy who's kind of struggling and, you know, hopefully gets healthy and we see him hit better than he's hit so far. Anything that jumps out to you, again, other than the other key thing we will note, DH only this year, which is also a concern.
Yeah, and I think even dating back to last year, I had some of my concerns. If I remember correctly, he hit, you know, was doing humongous numbers in the first half. And then things started to tail off a little bit. There might have been some injuries as well. But the swing and miss, like, really bottomed out as he was promoted. And it feels like it's never come back to that sort of resting point that we thought it was. Like, I think we thought this guy had a 50 hit tool initially when he first came into pro ball, that there might be some swing and miss, but it was a tolerable enough because of swing decisions and all that. And he hit stuff in the zone. And then the end zone swing and miss really jumped in the second half of last year. And I think those were the first warning signs. Now, you know, he hasn't really been able to stay healthy. You know, has been DHing, which obviously is a concern. You have to wonder, you know, how much he's aching or what he's dealing with in particular. And the swing and miss, just he hasn't overcome it. So another guy on a much larger scale, not in terms of height, but in terms of swing and miss, than Bryce Eldridge, but, you know, similar in terms of like really outlier 70 top of the scale sort of power and quality of contact. It's just Eldridge has more consistently been able to channel that and get to enough contact for it all to play than Isaac has. And I think that's the big concern. Can he make enough contact?
I forgot to mention one other thing about Eldridge, a positive with Eldridge I wanted to bring up, because I think it gets lost how bad a defensive first baseman and how unreliable a first baseman Bryce Eldridge was last year. His error rate at first base was last year unplayable. It was at a rate where it's like, I didn't know that first baseman could have that many errors. This year he has five. This year, five. And by the way, since he got promoted to AAA, one. Like, he's had a couple. He had one game where he had two fielding errors, but he's been a much more reliable defender this year. And I do want to bring up kind of that positive, because if you were paying very close attention last year, you may have noticed that it's like, no, like last year, I just want to bring these numbers up so I have them in front of me. So in 24, he had 18 errors at first base in 100 games. 18, again, minors, majors are very different. 18 errors will rank you among the major league leaders in errors in a given year. And that's never a first baseman. That's shortstops. That's guys who field the ball a whole lot and then throw it across the diamond. Third baseman having to react really quickly and they have a wild throw. 18 errors for a first baseman is a number that you should never see. That has improved this year, and that is something that is encouraging. I think we should at least mention that also. So that gets us the part we always in the podcast with our prospect soapboxes, where we talk about non-top 100 prospects who we kind of who have caught our eye for one reason or another. I'll start this week, and I'm starting with one that you may, when you hear his name, go, wait, that's not a prospect anymore. Forrest Whitley. Top prospect, one of the top pitching prospects in baseball in 2018, 2019 kind of era, you know, like long time ago, pre-pandemic, has had a lot of injuries, a lot of ups and downs since then. At this point was, you know, DFA'd, was picked by the Rays, you know, picked up on DFA when he was waived by the Rays, put in the bullpen. Had an outing, his second to last outing in the major leagues is one of those where you never want to have an outing like that as a reliever. I believe it's zero outs, six runs. That's going to leave a mark on your ERA that you're pretty much not going to recover from. DFA'd again, and here's the keynote, then cleared waivers. So now he is off the 40-man roster and pitching in AAA Durham in the rotation again. That's the key part of this. And I will be honest, Jeff has warned me on this one. He's like, it's going to, you know, JJ, don't do it. It's going to break your heart. Like, because Forrest Whitley's always had stuff and it has not all come together. But that said, seeing him Saturday night against Robbie Snelling, I'll tell you, he wasn't as good as Robbie Snelling, but he looked pretty good. Not a great Jacksonville lineup he was facing, but the changeup was filthy. The cutter was really good. The fastball, which was 94, 95. Was good enough to go with those. He has a slider and a curve, I think, that kind of turn into a slurve sometimes. That was probably the pitch that was at times a little bit iffy. When he gave up hard contact, it was largely because of that. But he could also drop it in as kind of a surprise pitch at times and steal a strike with it. The strikeout rate, the walk rate as a starter in AAA, pretty good. Stuff pretty good. He's 27. I don't want to make this sound like this. Look, check out this young prospect who's, you know, but if you told me the Rays have done a really good job of reclamation projects over the years, if you told me that there's still kind of a big league future and some big league success in the future for Forrest Whitley, I'll tell you, I saw hints of that on Saturday, and we'll see what they can do. Maybe it never comes together. Maybe it does, but I was intrigued. And now, Jeff, before you get to your soapbox, you can now tell me how I'm a crazy man who should just have, you know, like pick someone else this week if you want.
No. I think it's interesting. I think especially considering he's starting. It would be such a typical Rays story and such kind of a typical pitching prospect story. Like these are, you know, the pitching prospects kind of never die. It feels like sometimes these guys can go away for a bunch of years and then pop back up at 27 or 28, figure something out, maybe finally feel fully healthy after, you know, a litany of shoulder and elbow and a bunch of injuries we probably don't even know about. And the Rays seem to be the team that figures out how to get control back for guys, you know, whatever that might be. We've, you know, talked about it before in terms of their ability to grow strike rates. They did it with Joe Boyle. You know, I think it would be really exciting if they could do this with Forrest Whitley. So the stuff is there. If the strikes are there and he's going five or six innings, in Triple A, I mean, that's further than I think the Astros even got him when he was at his best. So it's really interesting, you know, and it's a fun story and kind of what makes following baseball and covering prospects such a blast, because, you know, you think one thing and then 5 years later, it's like the reality could be the complete opposite of what you were, you know, entrenched in.
I think I've been writing about Forrest Whitley for 10 years now, almost. Mm-hmm. So, as a pro, you know, it's coming up on that. So it's kind of crazy, but so that kicks it to you. So who is your prospect soapbox?
Yeah. My prospect soapbox is a player that I'm truly on a soapbox for, and that's Jackson Wiggins of the Cubs. I think a guy that's creeping into kind of top 100 conversation. He's just behind, like, you know, Ballesteros and, you know, Casey and Alcantara and some of those top guys. But I think there's a case that he could maybe even be better in some of these trade negotiations. I've been hearing that teams have been more interested in Jackson Wiggins than maybe some of those position players. Some of that might be a need fit and just the value, you know, of a pitching prospect. But I do think this is a guy that, you know, probably shouldn't be eligible very shortly, regardless of where he's playing baseball in a week. Shouldn't be eligible for a prospect soapbox because he's on the top 100 list. And, you know, I think you dig into the stuff. You know, it's a fastball that checks all the boxes. You know, he sits 96 to 97 miles per hour, can ramp it up to 100 miles per hour. He's got a low release height with, you know, really clean backspin, a lot of efficiency that, you know, creates ride from a low release. He has that low VAA fastball, gets extension. He's 6'6" doing that. So it's not like he's just this short guy that's kind of gaming the fastball plane. He's got real power and plus fastball traits. I think you could put a 70 on this pitch pretty easily. And he's dominated the minors this year across high A and then mostly in double A this season. You know, hitters have hit 159, 305, 238 against that fastball. And to put it in perspective, that's a pitch he's throwing 58% of the time, and they're putting up those numbers against it. 34% miss rate, which is really high for a fastball. It's a lot of chases for a fastball as well. At, you know, 28%, gets a lot of swinging strikes at the top of the zone or just above it. And then he's got a plus slider that, you know, sits 87 to 89 miles an hour. Will touch the lower 90s, you know, tighter break on that, kind of cuttery. That's a really good swing and miss pitch that generates chase swings as well. You know, a 44% miss rate against that pitch. Batters this year have hit 146, 167, 220 against the slider. And it's shown some growth with the changeup as well. Drives a lot of ground balls with that pitch. He's got a 50% ground ball rate against the changeup while generating whiffs at a 47% rate. It's his highest chase rate pitch of his arsenal, 36%. That's allowed him to really neutralize left-handed hitters and kind of own that, you know, the inner half of the plate when he throws it there and then gets guys to chase in the outer half and allows him to sort of set up a slider back door. So I think we're seeing the maturation of a pitcher here with Jackson Wiggins, someone that we've always known physically and stuff wise, had all the ingredients dating back to when he was a prep prospect and then went to Arkansas, dealt with some health stuff and really never got his opportunity. We're finally seeing him, you know, a year plus from returning from surgery, really taking that step forward as a pitcher and, you know, kind of brewing all the ingredients together in terms of the stuff, the pitchability, the execution, and the physicality that's needed to deal with the wear and tear as a starting pitcher in the major leagues. So I think he's a really exciting, huge green arrow up guy for me in 2025.
He is an interesting one, and we'll see. Like, he's an interesting one that could affect, you know, the big league club in some way or another, you know, as we record this, you know, whether that's being a key player in a trade or whether that's being someone who could come up and join the big league club at some point late in the season. So we'll see. But that's another prospect podcast with me, JJ Cooper, as well as Jeff Ponce. We will be back again next week. I think next week we may have Josh Norris joining us. I think we're going to do a lot of basically the Bears Complex League adventures, because Josh has been to the Arizona Complex League, the Florida Complex League, and the Dominican Summer League. And now that the ACL and FCLs are over, he's already done top 20 prospect list for both of those. He's working on the DSL. I think it's going to be, right now we're saying top 30. Who knows how many players may be on that before it's all said and done. But with all that coming together, we think we're going to have Josh on to talk about that. And we'll share some video from all his adventures as well on next week's Baseball America Prospect podcast and YouTube video. We thank you for the download. If you're podcasting, we thank you for reviews, helps other people see it, and for liking and subscribing on YouTube. And if you do enjoy this, check out a lot of stuff. We have a lot of stuff over at the Baseball America YouTube channel. Just search Baseball America on YouTube. You will find it very easily if you are listening to the podcast and want to check out some of the videos. For Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.